Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. Here's a riddle for you. What do squishy buffalo, jello brains, and GPS have in common? Well, science, of course, and the Science Alberta Foundation. The group's latest science festival attracted over 6,000 people to many events in the Fort McMurray Wood Buffalo region of Alberta. And all the fun and frolic helped put a new spin on science, from the experiments kids do in school to the technology their parents deal with every day on the job. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta.
I haven't seen the jello brain yet.
About the toads. They were doing this project on them at Suncor. Yeah, the Canadian toads or something.
Well, we have a huge garden where we throw our apple cores and they compost by the worms.
There's lots of science in the backyard. And nothing else, the melting of the snow, right? The heat that's staying in the rocks around us.
Well, through things like this, I've learned about reclamation. Yeah, that job, I've learned a lot about it. And some just of overall science jobs, just like studying different principles and stuff of science.
This stuff is new, how to put out a candle and everything, but when I'm at home, I take different food colors and stuff, and I make soap and, like, baking soda. Or I was really curious what happens when you put water and yeast together, and I found that if you just leave yeast and, like, soap together, it doesn't do, but if you leave water and yeast together, the yeast dissolves.
I didn't know that there were certain types of dinosaurs.
There's only one type of dinosaur at this table.
Those were just some of the comments from people who attended the recent Wood Buffalo Science Fest. The science festivals are unique to Alberta. They're an annual event sponsored by the Science Alberta Foundation, and in past years have been held in communities like Lethbridge and Grand Prairie. The Wood Buffalo Science Fest was a chance for people of all ages to come out, participate in some wild and crazy events, and learn about how science fits into our everyday lives. Paula Leslie is the Community Relations and Festivals Coordinator for the Science Alberta Foundation.
Oh, it was a fabulous event. It was 5 days of amazing science all over Wood Buffalo. As you know, the region's very large, but we had many events throughout the city of Fort McMurray. We had performers in the schools, a lot of our science programs right in the schools with all the kids, things at the Senior Center, at the Peter Pond Shopping Mall, at the YMCA, fabulous Saturday Fun Science Day at Father Mercury Community High School. My gosh, a science cafe Saturday night. And, of course, the really big event was the opening ceremonies at the Sawridge with Roberta Bondar, Canada's first female astronaut. Just all kinds of science for kids of all ages, showcasing really neat science of the area, of the businesses in the area, and allowing kids to really have an opportunity to see the types of jobs in science that they can have, and they can have and still stay right there. They don't have to travel afar after they go to school.
Do you have any indication of how many people actually participated?
We are still tallying all our numbers at this point. Some of the numbers, just in terms of the presenters that were at the various events and through the schools, were at about 6,000. But we still haven't counted the reach that we had programs through our media. Because not only were we promoting the events, but we were promoting science. We had science questions with the Battles of the Sexes in the Morning program, and people were still talking about, that's why cheese is funny the second time you melt it, and on a pizza, they're talking about. And a lot of things that really got to the people just through the buzz around town. It was very exciting for a number of people who were unable to attend some of the events, but they got the sense that, yeah, this is about science and there are some really neat things here.
How did you manage to score the fellow from Lord of the Rings who was responsible for choreographing all the different fight scenes? How did you get him up there?
Well, I'd love to say that that was our idea and we were able to connect with him, but I have to admit, and I'll be perfectly honest, is course, we lucked out. He was scheduled to work with the drama and acting students at Keanu College. So a number of our committee members who work with Keanu College, and in particular Mark Petkow on our program committee, told us about the fact that Tony Wolf was going to be here. We called him the fight guy for a long time, but he is in fact a fighting styles designer, and how we could have him for a couple of nights or a couple of shows or whatever. So we just piggybacked off Keanu, and in fact for the presentations he brought four or five of the students along with him, and they sat in the audience, and he was able to bring up these acting students to be his, you know, help him with his demonstration to really show how he builds and creates these scenes. So we were just really fortunate, and it was wonderful, really well attended.
This whole idea of having a science festival, where does it come from, and how did you figure out that you could actually make science exciting? Because when you look at all of the things that, all the activities, they were very exciting, but I wouldn't necessarily think of that on a day-to-day basis.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of us, me included and lots of people I work with, you know, you tend to grow up and you think that science is a class in school. Or you think perhaps someone wears a lab coat and just works with test tubes all the time, where that's not so. Science is inquiry. Science is observation. There's a real adventure behind it. And if you look at a young child, they get that because they are learning at such a rapid rate and they are always observing, always experimenting with things. So what we try to do is bring that science to life in a community. As you know, we have other programs where we work very directly with curriculum in the schools, where the festivals is more of an extension into the community. So we work with the local science as well as the local community, the people there, but to see the science in their own area. With the festivals, our attempt is to connect the dots between science and technology and everyday life for people in their own communities. And it's not difficult. You bring out the examples and you bring them out in an engaging way or very interactive way where people can try it. They're not sitting and listening to a lecture. If you speak to any of the people that attend the festival, they're not going to say that they were taking notes and someone was lecturing at a podium. It was very engaging. There was music involved. There were people pulled from the audience as examples and different, you know, exciting things. Lots of opportunity for the audience to ask questions and things like that. So we involve them and we bring people in and use the local scientists that use experimentation so they can really see, touch, feel the science that's right here. And it's fun. We make it fun.
None of this happens without money or support from the corporate community. How do you bring them in?
The corporate community has been fabulously supportive of this event. Initially, our lead is Suncor Energy Foundation. They have supported Science Alberta Foundation for a long time, and in particular with respect to festivals in the northern part of the province. They have very strong feelings to support their community. In fact, that's why we've expanded it from Fort McMurray, just the city, to the Wood Buffalo region. And we had activities in Anzac, Fort McKay, Conklin, different areas around where either our crates were going to the our science crates were going to the schools, or we had presenters come for their opening ceremonies. So Suncor was very supportive of the things. From there, our chief development officer here, working with our chairs who are local community leaders, but also members of the board of directors of Science Alberta Foundation. Together, we also approached other members of the oil and gas industry, vendors, suppliers, partners, whatever, with Suncor, and of course a lot of local business, whether they were in-kind donors or financial supporters. And the notion of bringing science to life, the notion of science in our own community, and clearly the support of showcasing careers for children in science and technology and right here in Wood Buffalo, I can't certainly say it wasn't an easy sell because everybody worked very hard. But the corporate community really stepped up, and they were very, very supportive, and we really appreciated that.
Paula, when you're putting these science festivals together, there's so much work involved. How do you manage when you're working from Calgary?
I work very closely with the organizing committee and the people on the street, but I must admit the other key piece is that we have the support of the business community. And with respect to the Wood Buffalo Festival, we had the Oil Sands Discovery Center donate an office for us and a computer and meeting space and a phone line and the staff to help us out. So it was really great support and couldn't have done it without them.
Where's the next festival going to be held?
We are already planning for Grand Prairie in 05. We're working with a number of the people who were involved in their previous festival in 2003, as well as we've booked co-chairs in the community, and we're starting to talk to a number of people. We've got some ideas for the people we want to invite as our presenters, and it's starting to roll out. So we're right back to the beginning and further along than just the beginning, but we're working on the next one. So, and Grand Prairie has had science festivals before, too, so they too are very supportive, and they're a community that really embraces science and celebrating it.
Thank you very much, Paula.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Paula Leslie, the Community Relations and Festivals Coordinator at the Science Alberta Foundation. Up next, the Science Cafe and the Ethics of GPS.
I'm somewhat familiar with GPS, but I certainly heard a lot more tonight about the technology and just some interesting stories and some thoughts about its use in the future. It's amazing how the technology is, you know, which is relatively new, is being commercialized and used throughout the world, and the number of users, which ranks in the millions.
One of the new events at the Science Fest in Wood Buffalo was the Science Cafe, an opportunity for a little learning and a lot of discussion around a controversial topic, the ethical issues raised by the advent of GPS, or global positioning systems. Leading the Saturday night discussion was Dr. Elizabeth Cannon. Elizabeth is a professor at the University of Calgary, where she's the head of the Geomatics Engineering Department.
Well, it is a constellation of satellites, consisting right now of 28 satellites that are orbiting the Earth, 20,000 kilometers in space, moving at 4 kilometers per second. And there are 6 orbital planes. If you actually look at the system, it effectively forms a cage around the Earth. So at any one time, if you walk outside, you're going to be tracking about 10 of those satellites, let's say. And effectively what we can use the system for by receiving signals from these satellites is to determine our location on Earth, so our latitude, our longitude, and our height. And it also gives us information on timing. So it is a positioning and navigation system that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anywhere on Earth. So it is a truly global system.
What's the history of GPS?
Well, interestingly, for those that have heard of GPS, it tends to be quite recent, so we think of it as very new technology. But the system was actually conceived back in the late 60s, and some of the early work done in the early 70s with the first satellite launched in 78. So it is a system that was designed by the U.S. Department of Defense, actually for military purposes, to provide a navigation capability to their troops. However, the signals are open and freely available, not quite all the signals that the military have, but certainly sufficient to do wonderful things on the commercial or civilian side. So the system conceived very early on, again for military purposes, but has really blossomed to have millions and millions of users today, most of them not in the military, and using it for a wide variety of applications. So if you look at where the system is today relative to what it was conceived to do in the early days, totally exceeded everyone's imagination.
What are some examples? Because I know now you see advertisements for cars, for instance, that have GPS in them.
Absolutely, and that's a huge market, having GPS in vehicles, and that can range everything from being able to get us from one point to another to insurance companies who love it if people have these devices in their cars that they can track stolen cars, let's say. Right to systems I have seen developed to help track Alzheimer's patients, or even help navigate maybe blind people through some neighborhoods and so on. Some of the growing markets are using GPS and things like cellular telephones. So this is quite widespread in the United States, certainly moving into Canada, where we will have the capability, if we're in an emergency situation, we can dial 911 and they'll be able to locate us to about 100 meters. Not in all locations. There's some challenges around operating indoors. But being able to locate us for emergency situations, but also, again, having at our fingertips or in our hand a cell phone or a personal digital assistant, PDA, that has a location capability. So we could use it to navigate to, you know, the closest store or restaurant of our choice. So those are some very practical benefits. But if you look at other things, perhaps outside of what we would touch and feel on a day-to-day basis, everything from landing aircraft in the future, navigating ships more safely so we don't have things like the Exxon Valdez where we had huge oil spills, to managing trucks. Trucking companies use it quite extensively, taxis, police, and so on and so forth. So it's really permeated a large component of our society. Some of it we see and some of it we don't necessarily see.
What is the aspect of your research with regard to GPS?
Well, a lot of the work that we do, and I should state that we've got 6 faculty members here working on various aspects of GPS and over 40 graduate students. So it's a very large program. We draw students from all over the world, from many different backgrounds, physics, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering. So it's very diverse, very exciting. Our work really spans everything from very high accuracy positioning by using some very specialized mathematics. You can actually position platforms or vehicles down to a few centimeters. It's not trivial. It's not working all the time, but certainly pushing the envelopes in terms of accuracy. Pushing the envelopes in terms of performance. I mentioned that having GPS working in indoors is a challenge, but if you want to have it on your cell phone and you are in an emergency in a parkade or in the basement of a building, you still want to be found. So we're working on techniques to be able to make the performance better in what we call these weak signal environments. The signals are very weak from space, so you can imagine going through walls and other structures, it even attenuates that much more. So looking at techniques to make that better, but also looking at application development as well. We do a lot on the transportation side, so looking at future generation car navigation systems. We're doing work right now with a major car manufacturer where they're interested in positioning vehicles down to a few centimeters. And that would, if you look at, well, why would we need to know that? It gets into issues such as more safe vehicles and perhaps way down the road, autonomous driving. We're also doing work looking at, on the aircraft side, a major project with the U.S. Navy where they're looking at landing aircraft and aircraft carriers autonomously. So you can imagine an aircraft coming in to land on that small runway and an aircraft carrier and trying to do that perhaps with no pilot on board. You need to do very accurate positioning of the aircraft relative to the carrier, and it needs to work very well. There's not a lot of margin for error. So looking at all the aspects to make that happen is really what we do. So it's everything from sort of theoretical development as well as application development. And a side benefit of what we do is we embed a lot of our techniques and algorithms into software. We've actually commercialized and licensed that software to many groups worldwide. So again, there's a benefit to the community and also back to our researchers because they are involved in sort of seeing their work really utilized.
You've talked about the practical and the beneficial aspects of the development of GPS, but there are also concerns for the public from an ethics point of view, and you were involved with the Science Alberta Foundation, the Wood Buffalo Science Fest, and that's exactly the topic that you were addressing with people. It was quite a lively discussion. One of the big concerns, one of the questions from the audience was, how does this affect our privacy? How does it affect our privacy when you've got Big Brother watching you, in a sense?
Well, that's a really good question because part of it, with any technology, and if we think of the internet, it's wonderful. We think, how do we survive without email and getting on the web? But then, of course, there's the other side of it saying, well, with any technology, there is the potential for misuse. Now, in the case of GPS, one of the interesting things about presenting to the public is trying to inform and trying to dispel some of the myths. One of them is that GPS satellites don't actually take pictures of you, so there's no kind of record in terms of images. They're transmitting signals. We receive those signals in the electronics that computes a location. The other thing is that we're not transmitting anything back to the satellite. So at any one time, nobody really knows we're actually receiving these signals and determining our location. However, if we put GPS in a cell phone or GPS with a communications device, that location that is computed can be transmitted to a third party. And that is where some of the potential abuse comes in. There are situations that I've certainly heard about where I know in one case a gentleman was caught stalking his ex-wife, where he had embedded a GPS receiver and communication device in her vehicle and was able to know it, transmitting that location back to his computer, and he was able to know where she was, and he would show up at the hairdresser and other locations where she was, and she was questioning, how did he know that I had an appointment at the hairdresser? How did he know I was going to get groceries at this particular store? And they found that the reason he knew was because of this technology, which is quite small, could, size of a calculator, let's say, put in her vehicle that she didn't know was there. So there's certainly some issues around that. However, I think with any technology that's there and it has to be managed, but the benefits certainly outweigh any of these problems. If you look at it, for example, of tracking, let's say, somebody who's on probation and they're not supposed to go X number of meters or kilometers away from their residence, and that can be tracked, there would be a benefit of knowing where someone is. So, or having it on our children, perhaps. So, again, with any technology, it can be abused, and certainly as a society, that is something that we have to pay attention to. But it's not to say all the technology is bad. There's certainly huge benefits, huge savings of lives now and into the future, and certainly to make our lives better in terms of accessibility. So I think, you know, it's something that has to be balanced. I think having good open discussion with the community around that is very positive. So people don't take sort of a black and white view. They can say, yes, this technology overall has huge benefits, but these are some of the things that we have to watch out for so it doesn't get abused.
One of the other questions that was brought up by the audience dealt with the political arena and sovereignty. Who actually owns the satellites that are up there orbiting the Earth?
It's a very good question. They're actually owned by the United States government because, again, they're the ones that launch it. They maintain it on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. And certainly within the global community, that has made some nations somewhat nervous. From the perspective, although, you know, certainly, you know, to support the United States, they provided a very stable, a very continuous, an excellent service and system over 20 years or more. But if you look at some applications, and let's say landing aircraft, a commercial aircraft in Heathrow Airport, so if we look at the European community, and would they feel comfortable having aircraft landing on their territory using a system owned and operated, if you will, by the U.S. government? And that brings up some issues around sovereignty. And I think, you know, that's just one application. But there was enough concern around that the European Union actually are in the midst of developing their own satellite navigation system called Galileo. Obviously, they have learned tremendously about what GPS can do. So they are looking almost at a future generation system. They've been able to learn and build that in terms of extra capability. So that system will be an additional 30 satellites. It'll have some very interesting characteristics. So by 2008 and 2010, we will not only have the 28 GPS satellites, we will have probably 30 Galileo satellites. So we will have close to 60 satellites in space providing a navigation capability, which from a user perspective is a huge advantage. So we're doing quite a bit of work actually on the research side to look at how we can use the signals from these two systems, integrate them together for the benefit of the navigation of ships, aircraft, whatever. So I think if you project that forward in time, from a user perspective and a community perspective, things are only going to get better.
The discussion that you entered into with the Science Alberta Foundation and the Science Cafe, What does that say to you about what the future is for this type of research and this field and the young people coming along who might go into it?
Well, I think what's really nice as a researcher is obviously we like what we do. We like to talk about what we do, but speaking to the community has huge value from a few perspectives. One is that you get to present something that is leading edge and something that you have a lot of passion about to a community. And secondly, you are able to hopefully impart some knowledge. I think one of the best things about going and speaking to groups at things like the Science Cafe is that you see people walk out saying, I learned something. They've got a smile on their face because I think in many cases science and technology to many people is intimidating. And if they can come in and hear things that are going on in their own backyard, learn them and understand them and appreciate what it can do for society, because that's really what drove me to work not only in engineering but this area particularly, is seeing it benefit the community. So to see people walk away with that knowledge and a bit of a sparkle and recognizing they're probably going to go home and tell a few other people about what they've learned, that's absolutely the icing on the cake, and it makes sort of the hard work really, really pay off for me. In terms of the future, I mean, the sky's the limit. The applications using this technology are endless. You know, you can just imagine it's used in farming, it's used in tracking Formula One cars. It's used in so many places, and the expectations from the community are that the performance will get better. You'll be able to take these devices anywhere and you'll still get good at positioning performance. Really drives us to continue to work in this area and, of course, to excite young people to come along. And as a university professor, one of the best parts of my job is working with young people that are very excited about what they're doing, very passionate, and are really going to take things to the next level.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Elizabeth Cannon, head of the Geomatics Engineering Department at the University of Calgary. She participated in the Science Cafe at the recent Wood Buffalo Science Fest organized by the Science Alberta Foundation. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Science Alberta Foundation, Alberta Research Council, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Ducks Unlimited Canada, and the Alberta Conservation Association. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.